The views expressed on the following program are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of WMEL staff, management, or advertisers.
This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
This is Donna Anselmo, and welcome to Bold Talk Business Radio on AM 1300, the Talk to Me station. We are going to be talking about a subject near and dear to most people's hearts, which is a subject about what gives meaning to your life and what tells you that you're reaching your purpose and what you're called to do in this life. On Bold Talk Business Radio, we deliver insights, strategies, tips, and tools for success every Saturday afternoon. We help business owners, professionals, career professionals, job seekers, think about what it is that they want to do and how they can step themselves up in their game and achieve the things that are really meaningful to them. One of the things I talk about is having higher levels of success and satisfaction. And I think satisfaction is going to be something that really drives the conversation with our call-in guest today, which is Jeff Goines, author of The Art of Work. And before we speak with Jeff, I want to let our listeners know that we have a special guest host in the studio with us today, returning from Speak Out, Listen In, a WMEL show, is Gene Newell. And Gene is with us. Hello, Gene. Thanks for being with us again today.
Good afternoon, Donna. We have a lot to cover today, and it sounds like a very interesting topic.
Well, I love having you back in the studio with us, Gene, as you know. And I think you and I have had many discussions about what's meaningful in life and what's purposeful, and we are on purpose today with Jeff Goines, as I said, author of The Art of Work, A Proven Path to Discovering What You Are Meant to Do. Jeff, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your book and to ask you to tell us a little bit about the why of it. What brought you to write a book like that? Jeff? Okay, I don't know where my caller is, but I think he's here somewhere. So, Jeff Goines, are you with us?
Hi. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Okay, now I got you. Thank you so much. Thanks for being with us. What I was saying is that we want to tell our listeners a little bit about your book, The Art of Work, A Proven Path to Discovering What You Were Meant to Do. And maybe we could start that discussion by talking a little bit about how you came to write this book.
Sure, yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Donna, and great to be with you, Gene, as well. I wrote this book because I keep hearing more and more people talking about their work or the work that they want to do, less in terms of what it takes to make a living and more in terms of what it takes to make a significant life. And I interviewed a bunch of people, and as I did this, I started to learn things that resonated with my own story of how I became a small business owner, an author, and an entrepreneur. And I realized that I think there are some universal themes, some lessons that we can learn from other people's stories about what it takes to find meaningful work.
And I think that you're really onto something here, and you framed it out in a way, it's like the age-old question, you know, what is the meaning of life? I think there was a Procol Harum song that said, life is like a beanstalk, isn't it? Da-da. But what you're dealing with and wrestling with in this book is a question that people wrestle with for themselves almost every day, unless they have gained a particular level of awareness and of purpose and clarity in their lives. And awareness is something that you talk about in your book as being really critical to finding your passion. Can you talk a little bit for our listeners about what awareness is and why it's critical to finding what your life really is about?
Sure. Well, you know, I think that people confuse clarity with awareness. Most people that I talk to, if they're trying to figure out what they're supposed to do with their lives, they would say that they're waiting for clarity. And I think if you're waiting for clarity, you're going to be waiting a long time. One of the surprising things that I found in my research for this book was that people didn't have clarity. They acted in spite of not knowing exactly what they wanted to do, and clarity was something that came with action. So clarity is different from awareness, but I think awareness leads to, you know, clarity over time. Awareness is this idea that you have some vague notion of something that you could or should do. You just need to take the next step. And I love that Parker Palmer quote, who is an author and activist, and he wrote a book called Let Your Life Speak. And in that book, he says, before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I need to listen to my life telling me who I am. And I think awareness is that process of understanding who you are before you can actually figure out what you're meant to do.
I have many thoughts on, you know, on awareness. I'm, you know, from somebody who many years ago studied transcendental meditation and then has moved on into what originally for me, and I'll tell you a quick little vignette story. Years ago, I lived on Long Island. Bold Talk Business Radio is now based in Cocoa, Florida, and I'm from Melbourne, Florida now. But when I was on Long Island, I attended a conference put on by the National Association of Mother Centers, and I was on their corporate committee. And a woman who came as a speaker to the conference talked about gaining awareness from the standpoint of what the voices in your head are telling you. So sometimes I think we're listening to intellectual voices. Sometimes we're listening to those little bubble up messages that come to us. And for me, when I sat in that conference, I decided that this woman really, Dr. Diane Kramer from Peak Skills Learning Systems in New York, and she had developed a program called The Extraordinary Self. So I thought that was a very interesting thing to think about, what and how were the voices in my head influencing me and what I did. So I ended up taking her course, and her course had a segment on it that dealt with purpose. And I saw a similarity from her exercises and how you find your purpose to what you're saying about listening to your life. And I was hoping that you could expand on what you mean by listening to your life. How do we do that? How does someone listen to their lives?
Sure. Well, I went to a conference, you know, similar conference years ago about how to find your dream. And I was one of those people who was working a good job. I liked my job. I was making decent money, taking care of my family. I felt good about the work that I was doing, but I had this sense that something was missing. So I went to this conference to try to figure out, you know, what am I supposed to do with my life? Is there something more that I'm missing out on? Incidentally, I think, you know, when you're in a really good job, that's a dangerous place to be. If you're doing something good, but it's not great, that's even more dangerous than doing something that you hate, because if you hate it, then you absolutely know that you need to get out of it. And I didn't know that I needed to do that, but I was just thought there was something more. And in that conference, they asked everybody who felt like they didn't have a dream to raise their hand, and I raised my hand, and a bunch of people, about 80% of the room, raised their hand. And one of the speakers said, yeah, I don't think you're being honest. I think you do have a dream, and you know what it is. You're just afraid to admit it. And they said that this speaker said that you need to not look forward to find your dream. You need to look backward. And they recommended that we go through this exercise, which I talk about in the book, which is really just kind of thinking back on significant memories and moments in your life and plotting them out on a lifeline. You know, for example, in sixth grade, I won the spelling bee, the school spelling bee. I remembered, you know, one time when my mom used to read me the dictionary in, you know, on these long road trips. And then when I was in high school learning to play the guitar, I started a band, and I loved writing songs. And as I started plotting these things out, I realized that the recurring theme at different seasons and decades in my life was always writing. And so when I started listening to my life, I realized that it was telling me that I was supposed to be a writer.
Well, Jeff, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because that was my recurring theme also for much of my life, and I can relate to that. Another thing I can relate to is something that you said a couple of minutes ago about when it's dangerous to, you know, just be in a situation that's good, because sometimes it doesn't, I think the word that the way that I might phrase it is that it doesn't irritate you enough. You had said, right, you know, if you've got hate, it gives you a reason to change something. But it reminds me a little bit of, you know, that piece of sand in the oyster that acts as an irritant. And if you act on the irritant, you can come up with the pearl.
Yeah, I love that. I agree with that.
Yeah, so tell me then, you know, for people who are thinking about what their life is about and what the meaning of their life is and the purpose of their life. A lot of times, and you discuss this in your book a little bit, about the link between happiness and purpose, or happiness and, you know, pursuing your life's work. Is happiness what we're about?
I don't think so. I mean, I write in the book that the worst way to be happy is to try to be happy. You know, I think happiness is in some ways a paradox. It's a byproduct of a well-lived life. If you're spending all your time trying to do things that make you happy, I think that's one of the fastest ways to make your life seem very empty and miserable. And I base that on the research of a psychologist by the name of Viktor Frankl, a well-known psychologist from the 20th century, survived World War II concentration camps, and went on to write Man's Search for Meaning, which is really about, you know, how to live a life of purpose and meaning. And he argued that in order for you to have a meaningful life, you needed three things. You needed a project or some kind of, you know, something to work on, a relationship, someone to love, and somebody who would love you, and then a redemptive view of your suffering or pain, the bad things that happened to you. You had to, you know, be willing to forgive your enemies and not be asking questions of, you know, what could have happened if, you know, such and such. And, you know, those three things lead to a life of happiness. But when you're just trying to be happy, which usually is about self-satisfaction, usually that's a recipe for a miserable existence, because it's all about you. And Frankl would say that true happiness is about giving of your life for something greater than you.
One of the things that we identified, because I went on to work with Dr. Diane Kramer, and one of the things that we had identified as really important in people's lives is the sense of purpose. And in research that we had done, looking at what makes really successful people successful and prominent very often is their connection with a purpose larger than themselves. And you see that some of the people who are the biggest names out in our news community and in our corporate communities are people who are out there serving others, that they have a philanthropic view of the world.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that you know, if you're constantly just chasing after the next thing that's going to make you feel, you know, good, make you famous or cool or successful, at a certain point you run out of things to chase, and you realize that those pursuits in and of themselves are somewhat empty. And one of the best ways to have a satisfying life is to, you know, have a larger purpose, something that's bigger than you. And when I was researching, you know, this topic of calling and purpose, I kept running into people who were doing meaningful work, and that was always a consistent theme, that they felt like their work wasn't just about them or making a paycheck. It was about some greater work that they got to be a part of.
Well, I think if you go back and you look at humanity from the time of the caveman, we lived in groups, and it's really important for us to recognize that survival happens in a certain way. And I think maybe part of what we were all meant to do is to have this collaborative view of ourselves, to be all taking care of each other, but in a way that we have individual responsibility and accountability for some of the things. You can't just sit back and wait for somebody else to do it for you. You're listening to AM 1300 WMEL, the Talk to Me station, and this is Donna Anselmo, host of Bold Talk Business Radio. We're speaking with author Jeff Goins of The Art of Work, A Proven Path to Discovering What You Were Meant to Do. And by the way, Jeff, I know that you've written several other books, and we're going to get to that in just a second. I want to mention it for our listeners. But I know that my guest co-host today, Jean Newell, has a question for you, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. Yes, I kind of a combined question. Here on the Space Coast, we experienced some big layoffs a couple years back, where people that had done the same job, their career, that's what they thought they wanted to do for 35 years, all of a sudden were in a position where they could no longer use that expertise, and they had to either start a business or try to find something else to fulfill their life's dream. And these people were too young to retire, but they were in that, you know, 50-plus years. So I'm thinking, would that also tie in? Have you have you studied this, that midlife crisis has something to do with finding your fulfillment and changing careers and finding out who you really are and what you want to be? I know when I was working with as a consultant with the NASA layoffs, a lot of these people, we try to find something of interest that they could start doing as a business, and it all fell back on what they really wanted to do when they were kids or young adults, and we started trying to find ways to reinvent themselves with their life's work and something they loved. And that was right along what you were saying, is giving meaning to your life. So my question is, do you find that midlife crisis, as well as people getting laid off later in life, gives them the inspiration to try to do some of these things that they've always dreamt of doing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jean. And one of the things that I saw, you know, consistently through the research that I did and when I was working on this book, I basically did two kinds of research. One, I just, you know, read a lot of studies and research about vocation and, you know, meaningful work and psychology, and then a lot of biographies. And then the other side was I interviewed hundreds of individuals who were doing meaningful work. It integrated with the rest of their life. They were, you know, making an impact on the world and on other people, and it was deeply satisfying for them. And what's interesting is the common denominator in all of those stories was something unexpected, sometimes tragic and catastrophic, other times, you know, kind of mundane, but it was always a surprise. Something surprising had to happen to wake somebody up. And I was talking to a friend about this, and they said, well, do you need some sort of inciting incident, you know, something that jars somebody to wake them up? Or can somebody just go, I want to have more meaning in my life. I don't need a tragedy to, you know, happen for me to do that. And I think that you need something to wake you up, but here's the catch. I think that there are always things that are happening in our lives that don't go according to plan. We just have to, you know, open our eyes to them. And one of the things that I kept hearing from people who I talked to throughout this, the writing of this book and now that people are reading it, is, you know, from boomers, people that are in their 50s, 60s, and even talking to people in their 70s and 80s, they have this feeling like maybe they missed it. And one of the stories that I tell in the book is about a woman named Jody Nolan who finds her calling at 58 years old. And I asked her, I said, could you have gone back, you know, 20 years when she worked at IBM for 15 years and was a stay-at-home mom for, you know, a decade or so, then helped her husband with his business for, you know, another season of life. I said, could you go back to, you know, being, you know, 25 or 30 and do this thing that you're doing now, running this organization? She helps people write letters to their loved ones. I said, could you go back and do that now without, you know, these people that she loved? She lost several people to cancer, and that sort of forced her into this work. She kind of woke up after that. And she said, no. She said, I couldn't do that because everything I've done in my life has prepared me for what I'm doing now. She said, nothing is wasted. And I like that idea that everything in your life is an apprenticeship for the next thing to come. I think that's true.
I want to take up the discussion of apprenticeship, but we have a caller on the line, and this is Mr. Jacques Holden, and people who listen to Bold Talk Business Radio and tune in a little earlier generally hear Jacques on the air. And Jacques, are you with us?
Yeah, I just got a question, Jeff, because I've done some research for workplace pleasure, happiness, how people feel about their jobs. Between 62 and 67% of men and women and young folks in the workplace aren't enjoying their job, and will go as far as to say, "As I hate my job." Why are people not happy, Jeff, in their workplace? Why such a high number?
Yeah, I've read some of those studies too, Jock. I read a Gallup poll of, it was a few years ago now, but still fairly recent. And it was of the world's workers. They conducted this worldwide study, and they found that 87% of the world's workers are what they call disengaged with their work, meaning they either hated it or they were indifferent to it. It was just, crazy. It was unbelievable. Why do people not love their jobs? I think that there's two reasons. One is, we tend to look at work, especially in the Western world, we tend to look at it as a means to an end. I work to get a paycheck to do the things that I really want to do. I don't think that's true. Dorothy Sayers, at the end of World War II, wrote this article called Why Work? And she talked about the importance after this period of time where all of the Allies, especially people in the UK and the United States, were rallying around this one central cause. Their work had meaning, it had purpose, because there was something bigger than them that they got to work towards when they went into the factory to, you know, provide munitions for, you know, the war. And when the war was coming to an end, she saw that they were going to face a crisis where people were just going to go to work for the sake of having a job, and she saw that that was dangerous. And she said that we need to work for the sake of work. We need to actually serve the labor, serve the work that we're doing, because it is inherently motivating and gratifying. So I think one is we have to have a healthier view of work, that it really is a means of finding fulfillment in your life. Work is not something that needs to, you know, be avoided, or it's not a distraction from the rest of your life. Truly meaningful work is something that will bring greater satisfaction to your personal as well as your vocational life. The second reason is, you know, obvious. People are in the wrong jobs. They either have the wrong attitude toward their job, or they're just doing the wrong thing because they don't really know themselves. And that's why I start The Art of Work talking about this idea of you need to know yourself. You need to begin with awareness, and then you can start to figure out what you're meant to do.
Well, I'd like to add something to that, Donna. Anselmo, host of Bold Talk Business Radio on AM 1300 WMEL. We've got just about another minute and a half here. And so what I want to add to that, answering that question, Jack, is that a lot of people go to work because it's something that they perceive in their own mind as something that they should do. And, you know, and it's part of the way that we're conditioned and inculcated as we're growing up. A lot of people are directed into careers based on their high school aptitude tests.
Or their families. If everybody in their family were in the medical fields, then they feel like they have to become a doctor as well.
Absolutely. So a lot of where we go with work centers on things that we were expected to do very often by other people. And I think what you're doing, Jeff Goins, with your book, The Art of Work, and your discussion of vocation, which we're going to pick up on in after the break, and I ask our listeners to hang in with us, because we're going to be talking more about the sense of vocation in work and about apprenticeship and about some of the other really momentous thinking aspects that Jeff has brought up in his book. And I think these are things that are important to everybody. So
that's a great book. Great book.
Yeah. The Art of Work, A Proven Path to Discovering What You Were Meant to Do by Jeff Goins. Jeff, hang with us because we're going to be back on the air.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Jack, for calling in. Jeff is also author of The In-Between, the book Wrecked, and you are a writer, and his website, Goins Writer, G-O-I-N-S-W-R-I-T-E-R, has been visited by more than 4 million people. Stay with us.
Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
Well, this is Donna Anselmo, and thank you for hanging with us during the break. We have been talking in the prior half hour with Jeff Goins, author of The Art of Work, A Proven Path to Discovering What You Were Meant to Do. Today in the WMEL studio with me is my guest host today, Jean Newell. And Jean was the former host of Speak Out, Listen In on AM 1300 WMEL, the Talk to Me station. So let's get talking for a moment with Jean. I know Jean is, she's my funny counterpart because I'm all serious. She's the all humor.
I'm always trying to find all humor all day. It was very interesting, half an hour with Jeff Goines. Is that how you pronounce his last
name? Yes, Goines, I believe. And Jeff, you're on the line with us, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, just hang on here.
It was very interesting because we all kind of have a similar background in helping people find their true calling, if you will. And a lot of people don't find that until later in life when something drastic happens, like Jeff was saying. But I thought it was kind of appropriate, Donna, that this month is National Humor Month, and it's also National Stress Awareness Month. And tomorrow, it is Go for Broke Day. And isn't that basically what we're talking about, Jeff? Go for Broke.
Absolutely, yeah.
And one thing on National Humor Month, I made a little note. And I thought it was, I didn't want to jump in when you were giving all that great information, but you made a comment that when you were on road trips, your mother used to read the dictionary to you. I'm thinking lots of words, but not much plot.
That sounds weird to me now. I never thought it was weird, you know, growing up. And I think that's one of the things that you realize when you step into your calling is what's obvious and normal to you is not necessarily obvious or normal to somebody else.
That's right. I think we always rely on what other people will think about us if we go outside of their ideal of what we should be doing. And like we were saying off air that, if you're coming from a family of doctors or lawyers, you kind of are expected to follow in their footsteps. And when it comes time for you to do that and all of a sudden you don't like it, then you're going against what has been instilled in you from day one.
And so that brings us back into a topic that Jeff Goines talks about in his book, The Art of Work, which is the piece of emotion that holds people back from going for the things that they really want to go for. And a lot of times, it's as Gene just said, you know, we're worried about what people are going to think of us. There's a fear that's based under a lot of our inertia. Jeff, do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking, it's interesting that National Humor Month and National Stress Month are coincide. There's something ironic or, you know, paradoxical about that.
Exactly.
I was talking to my therapist not too long ago, and I said, he's got these list of emotions, you know, the seven basic emotions, I think, and stress was not on there. And I said, what is stress? Like, when I feel anxious, what kind of emotion is that? He said, stress is fear. He says, it's being afraid of something that might happen and, you know, might not happen. And I thought that was interesting. I mean, when we think about work, especially in America, typically the word that we associate with work more often than not is not meaningful or happiness or anything like that. It's stress. And it's interesting to think that this word that's connected with work, really the base emotion is fear. I think we are afraid of failure or afraid of something, you know, going wrong or getting rejected by our friends or family. And what I learned when I was writing this book, interviewing all these people who've done incredible things with their lives, we shouldn't be afraid of failing as much as we should be afraid of succeeding at the wrong thing. You know, becoming a doctor or a lawyer when really you want to go be a painter. It's not that we're not going to have fear. It's really that we need to be fearing the right thing, in my opinion.
Well, I think there's an interesting point about fear also that you made in your book is that you need to be able to discern when fear is good or fear is bad. And it takes me back in my own mind to thinking about when fear is giving you a message that, yeah, sometimes you really do need to take stock and be cautious. But if fear is just holding you back and you don't have evidence that it makes sense, then the fear, I think, is the type of fear that throws you off course or halts your course. So you have, on the back of your book, Jeff, you've got a comment here, a headline actually, that says, don't settle for the status quo. Live a life that matters. So let's talk a little bit about what you mean by apprenticeship as a key part in finding your purpose. Does apprenticeship help you step out of the status quo and into a life that matters?
Yeah, I think so. I think that apprenticeship is the opposite of what you were talking about, Jean. You know, having a parent or a teacher, somebody pressuring you into doing something that isn't a good fit for who you are and how you were made and what you were built to do. Apprenticeship is the opposite of that. And in many ways, it's the process that takes over, you know, after our parents leave off. And, you know, I had great parents that, you know, as I mentioned, my mom really encouraged me in my love for words and probably helped instill some of that initially. But, you know, there comes a point where your parents stop parenting you, hopefully, if they're good parents, and you have to, you know, walk through the rest of life on your own, which is scary and, frankly, I think unnecessary. One of the things that I learned in doing this research is that every story of success, of somebody finding their purpose, is really a story of community. And part of that community was this process of what I call accidental apprenticeship, which is really about learning from all of the various teachers that are around you right now that are going to come alongside you to help you get to where you want to go. And in that way, you know, because I think we're all looking for mentors, people to help guide us. And that way we all have mentors available to us. And really the best ones aren't the ones that we have to go out and seek out and find necessarily. They're the ones that are standing right in front of us. We just need to open our eyes and include them more in our lives.
You're listening to AM 1300 WMEL, the Talk to Me station. This is Donna Anselmo, your host of Bold Talk Business Radio. We've got guest co-host today, Jean Newell, with us in the studio. And we've been speaking with Jeff Goines, author of The Art of Work. We're talking right now about apprenticeship and about the concept, I think, Jeff, where you were kind of what you were alluding to was that you can apprentice yourself not just to a trade. I mean, and when we were in an you know, growing industrial economy, when we were in a period of building with stone and whatnot, I love the book. I don't know if you're familiar with The Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett. And it was the story of a fellow who apprenticed himself to building a career. Excuse me, I'm thinking of career on Bold Talk Business Radio. He apprenticed himself to building a cathedral and to really learning stonemasonry. A lot of times when people think about apprenticeship, they're thinking about a trade, but you're talking about apprenticing yourself to an idea, and I love that.
Yeah, it's I think it's an important part of the process. I think just as, you know, babies have to learn from watching their parents talk, how to talk, I think we have to learn by watching other people around us what does a fulfilled life look like? What does it look like to do work that really matters? And we have to apprentice under people that are doing the kind of work that we want to do or living the kind of life that we want to live if we're going to be able to do it too.
Right. Jean Newell had alluded to something a little bit earlier today about the fact that on the Space Coast we had major layoffs that were related to the change-ups in the space program. And so there are a lot of people here who are finding themselves out of the comfort zone of being able to go to a job every day that they understood. And many of the people I know at the space program really loved that job because they felt that they were connected to something bigger than themselves. But the fact is that now they find themselves hovering, unemployed, thinking about maybe finding a new venture to get involved in. Talk a little bit about how apprenticeship is a plausible direction or solution when somebody is recently unemployed.
So I discovered in my research that Germany has one of the lowest unemployment rates in Western Europe. And the reason for this is because they have what they call a dual system, which is basically an apprenticeship system for university students where about half of your schooling is done in the school and the other half is done working this job where you actually get paid a third of a normal salary. And this program has about a 90% completion rate. And 50% of the students that go through it end up staying at the jobs where they apprenticed under, which is an incredible, retention rate for an employer, much less basically an internship, a glorified internship program. And, I think there's some things that we can learn from that dual system. Obviously, that there's a particular context to that. But, I think that in America, we tend to, especially teach our young people, you got to go learn some stuff, and then you got to go do some stuff. And then there's this big gap in between those two activities. And what the dual system gets right is they have them integrated. And so, I think that there are multiple opportunities to do this in our lifetime. One is, when we're going through the education process, we need to be intentionally engaging in activities that are going to allow us to practice what we're doing. But say, you're mid-career or mid-life or beyond, and you're feeling like you have to start over. Again, I think apprenticeship is this intentional process of you learning from other people around you how to do something that's going to give you an edge on the competition. It's going to give you an opportunity that your formal education or, your last 20 years at a job did not provide. And that's really this intentional process of you studying under somebody else. And I heard this story of an author, this man who's in his 50s and decided he wanted to write fiction. He'd never really, he was a blue-collar guy, never really written his entire life. And then at 50 years old, he decided he wanted to be a fiction author. And he, every night, would copy, page by page, these novels that he loved from all of these famous authors so that he could find his voice. And then he would, he published all these novels, these best-selling novels, and I heard him being interviewed on National Public Radio, several years later. That's an example of nobody's coming along and helping this guy out. He's intentionally creating his own apprenticeship, but he's learning from other people who are doing things that he wants to do.
Well, that brings me to want to tell my listeners about an investment attorney named Russell Weigel, who comes on this show with me once a month, the last Saturday of every month. Russell is the author of the book Capital for Keeps, Limit Litigation Risk While Raising Capital. And so while Jeff, you're talking about an intentional process of learning for success and next steps, what Russell does with this book is intentionally helps business owners with something very important. The SEC regulations protect investors when they have given their money to a business and things don't work out. And so the SEC has regulations to protect the investors. There aren't regulations so much to protect the business owners. So Russell's book, Capital for Keeps, helps business owners learn how to intentionally go out to raise capital, but in a way that they are going to protect themselves, their companies, and ultimately their investors. So if you're looking for money for your business, you want to look for the book Capital for Keeps, Limit Litigation Risk While Raising Capital, and you can find that at www.capitalforkeeps.com. We're going to follow up with some discussion of how failure leads to success as well. But Jean, I know, has a question for Jeff Goines.
Hi, Jeff. Jean Newell here. I can remember what you were talking about doing maybe some work as apprenticeship and so forth. And back in high school, we used to have work day. And if you were taking business courses, you left in the middle of the day for a couple of days a week and you became a secretary for the day, or you worked as an apprenticeship to a CEO or whatever it was. And that gave you a chance to dip your toe into that profession without committing, because I think that's another problem we're seeing is a lot of people have spent an enormous amount of money getting that degree, and now they think, how am I going to use this degree? I don't like that profession. And they're stuck with a degree, and now they have to either go back to school and so forth, or they get in that mediocre lifestyle of working in a profession they don't like. You're the author of The Art of Work, and I noticed on your website that you have some special bonuses and so forth if you go to your website. You have a four-part video course and a downloadable workbook, and you have exclusive access to you. could you tell us, what do you have something in one of your books or one of your video courses that helps people evaluate themselves as a little evaluation test to get them thinking about what they should be doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And at my website, artofworkbook.com, there's some free resources. You know, when you buy the book, you get all this other, you know, bundle of online bonuses that'll help you, you know, use the book better. But there are a couple of assessments that I recommend. I mean, you know, I think self-knowledge is, you know, partly internal in terms of you better understanding yourself, and you can do that through, I know some people who love the Enneagram and the Myers-Briggs personality profile. But then it's also external, and I've got several exercises where, you know, one of the best ways for you to understand things about yourself that may not be completely obvious to you right now is to just ask people that you love, friends, family members, spouses, partners, et cetera. And there are people that see things in you that you don't yet recognize. And my wife was one of those people for me. She was constantly asking me, when are you going to write that book? When are you going to write that book? And then one day I came home after spending money on this conference, and I said, I'm supposed to be a writer. She's like, are you kidding me? I've been telling this to you for years. So sometimes we don't always listen to them, but asking the people around us, I think, is a great exercise. And I've got some more practical exercises like that, you know, on that website.
And I've got a little story to add to that, too, because when I moved down to Melbourne, Florida, from Long Island, New York, on Long Island, I owned a marketing company, and I'd been in marketing for most of my career. I started out as a journalist and managing news editor, went to public relations and marketing communications, and eventually formed my own company. So I came down to Melbourne, Florida, joined a BNI group, and got invited to a Halloween party. And at the Halloween party, one of the people introduced me to a friend as, oh, this is Donna Anselmo. She is a business coach from New York. And I went, oh, I'm a business coach. And you know, like a light went on for me. It was something that resonated with me, and it changed the direction of what I have been doing for the past 10 years because I paid attention to what somebody else saw in me. So, Jeff, I really relate to what you just said.
Yeah, no, I love that. We need community to help us find our way in life. That's, I don't think that we make it on our own. This idea of a self-made man or woman, in my opinion, is a myth. We need the help of other people.
And what's that old expression? If you do something you enjoy doing, you won't feel like you're working a day in your life.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that's what's missing is if you can find, I always say, if you can find a way to make an income doing what you like to do, I wonder if there's something out there where just watching television all day with my feet up would... Is there such a thing as that, Donna? Probably.
Who can be a mattress tester, Jean? So let me ask you, we've got a few minutes left, and so I'm going to put you on an effective speed read assignment here, Jeff. What I'd like you to do is quickly run through for our listeners the seven stages of your process in the art of work. What is the path of stages that people need to be aware of in their life to find that meaning and purpose they're looking for?
Sure. So in the art of work, basically each chapter outlines a different stage in the process of finding your life's work. And, you know, I say these are stages, but they, once they begin, they kind of continue for the rest of your life, and they kind of overlap as you go. So not completely linear, you know. I think we're all a little bit skeptical of very simple, easy, you know, five-step paths to success. But in my research, I found these seven stages, you know, themes in people's lives to be pretty consistent. The first stage is awareness. It's this idea of listening to your life before you can tell your life what you want to do with it. You need to listen to what it wants to do with you. The second stage is apprenticeship. I call that accidental apprenticeship, and it's really this idea of watching somebody else do something, and usually that's a multitude of people, a community of people to help you get to where you need to go. The third stage is practice. You know, so once you kind of get an idea of what you might want to do, you start practicing it, and I call this painful practice, meaning you have to work really hard to get great at something. I think your calling is where your skill meets the world's need, where that meets your deepest pleasure. I mean, all three of those things colliding together forms your calling, which means you have to be good at it. You have to practice it. The fourth stage is discovery. This is actually the light bulb moment that most people are waiting for before they get going. It happens somewhere in the middle, and it's really process of building a bridge, not taking a leap. It really takes time to figure out what you're meant to do. Then there's profession, which is really about failing your way towards success. Doing this for a living professionally takes a lot of failure that all teaches you something, hopefully, to get you to this the next stage, which is mastery. And I describe mastery as being not a jack of all trades, but a master of some. This idea of the portfolio life, where you're not just doing one thing, but you're actually doing a few things and combining them in an interesting portfolio that is your work. And then lastly is the stage of legacy. And this tends to happen towards the end of your life, but it doesn't have to. I say in the art of work that your calling is more about what you leave behind than, you know, what you do with this, you know, life that you've been given. And there's this quote from Jackie Robinson that what makes a life significant is, it's not the work that we do. It's the impact that we leave on other people. So it's not just about us. And in a way, that's kind of what it's all about is how can I find what I love and do it in a way that's going to leave an impact on others. And those are the seven stages.
That's very insightful.
Jeff Goins, you've given us at Bold Talk Business Radio on WMEL AM 1300 today a lot to think about. And I want our listeners to know that they can go to your website, artofworkbook.com, for more information. We've got just about a minute left here, I think. And so what we want to do is let you know that Jean Newell is going to be with us next week on Bold Talk Business Radio. She's going to be guest hosting for me and pinch hitting while I'm out of the studio next week. And Jean is going to be talking about real estate.
Real estate and what's going on in real estate and mortgages, all kinds of things. And hopefully we find some experts that love their job coming on next week, right along our theme today.
It was really great to have Jeff Goins with us today. Jeff, you did a stellar job of, you know, sharing your thoughts with us today. And I am looking inside the back of your book, and I'm just going to quickly talk from the back of your book for a moment. The signs that you found your calling. One is that it's familiar. You find your calling not just by looking forward to what you will do, but by also looking back at what you've done. And I think that's where things get into what's meaningful. You find a calling by something that other people see in you, which is what Jeff said earlier. It's challenging. It requires faith. It takes time. It's more than just one thing. And I'm going to not tell you the very last thing on the calling list, because I want you to go and get Jeff's book at The Art of Work. Go to artofworkbook.com and reach out to Jeff Goins. This is Donna Anselmo, AM 1300, WMEL, Bold Talk Business Radio. Come back with us next week.